Tonight, what we're going to try to do is an interpretation of Victor Hugo's story, Les Miserables, and present to you some of the music from the show that was produced first in London, then New York, now Holden Village. The story of Les Miserables, or the Miserable Ones in English, begins in France in the year 1815. With the release from imprisonment of a man named Jean Valjean. He is a man without any family or any connections. He was imprisoned for 19 years for stealing some bread for his sister's children during the winter of hardship. He's been working as a galley slave in a severe imprisonment situation all that time. And upon his release occurs an event upon which the better part of the story kind of revolves. So until we get that story told, we can't really begin the rest of it and the music. The key event happens before any of tonight's music starts. So I'll tell that story and then we'll go on from there. As a former convict and a galley slave, Jean Valjean's documents are different from those of any ordinary French citizen. They're yellow instead of white. They indicate that he is a dangerous criminal and he is to be observed with caution and avoided. So upon his release, having earned a little money in his 19 years of imprisonment, he makes his way across the country and seeks shelter and seeks work, and he can find neither. Everywhere he goes, he's refused a bed and food. Every inn he goes to, he needs to present his documents. And every time the yellow paper comes out, he's turned away. So even though he has some savings in his pocket, he can't buy food or shelter. He goes to private homes, people who are generous citizens. And one gentleman even begins to prepare a meal for him. But as soon as he learns his history, he says he'll have to send him away. And so Jean Valjean says, all right, I understand, I'll leave as soon as I've eaten. And the man says, no, I can't feed you because of your status. And so he has to leave the home with the food cooking on the stove. And he seeks shelter in someone's backyard in a sort of a shed. But there are dogs there and they chase him out. Finally, he seeks refuge at the home of a priest. The priest is actually a bishop, the bishop of the region, but he's such a modest man, and he lives almost as a recluse. So he just seems like a normal curé to Jean Valjean. And he asks him for mercy and for shelter. The priest gives Jean Valjean a good warm meal and a warm bed for the night. But most importantly, he gives him his trust. Even so, Jean Valjean can't take comfort in this kindness because he doesn't know how to respond to it. He has been so maltreated that he can't think of himself as deserving comfort. He can't sleep because he hasn't slept in a bed for 19 years, and it feels so strange to him. He's a person with a deep and terrible anger that Victor Hugo describes this way. Here he describes Jean Valjean in his imprisonment. He talked little and never laughed. Through the diseased perceptions of an incomplete nature and a smothered intelligence, he vaguely felt that a monstrous weight was over him. In that pallid and sullen shadow in which he crawled, whenever he turned his head and endeavored to raise his eyes, he saw with mingled rage and terror forming, massing, and mounting up out of view above him with horrid escarpments, a kind of frightful accumulation of things, of laws, of prejudices, of people, and of acts, which was no other than that prodigious pyramid we call civilization. Here and there in that shapeless and crawling mass, he distinguished some detail vividly clear. Here the jailer with his staff, here the gendarme with his sword, yonder the mitered archbishop, and on high, in a sort of blaze of glory, the emperor, crowned and resplendent. All this, laws, prejudices, acts, people, things, came and went above him, marching over him and crushing him with an indescribably tranquil cruelty and inexorable indifference. Soul sunk to the bottom of possible misfortune, and unfortunate people lost in the lowest depths feel upon their heads the whole weight of that human society, so formidable to those who are without it, so terrible to those who are beneath it. I remember reading these words the first time last fall at Holden Village and being so struck by this wonderful description of the crushing weight of systems. The bishop lives very humbly. He lives with his sister. They are in possession of a fine set of silver plates, which he has served Jean Valjean his supper on. They're a remnant from the family's former nobility from before the French Revolution. In the night, Jean Valjean steals the silver and runs into the countryside. The next day, the police drag him back to the bishop's house, but the bishop does not acknowledge the theft. Rather, in front of the police, he asks Jean Valjean, greets him as a friend, and asks him why he didn't also take the candlesticks, in addition to the silver that he had given him as a gift. He sends the police away, and then he speaks to Jean Valjean in a blessing. He says, "Forget not, never forget that you have promised me to use this silver to become an honest man." Jean Valjean, who had no recollection of this promise, stood confounded. The bishop had laid much stress upon these words as he uttered them. He continued solemnly, "Jean Valjean, my brother, you belong no longer to evil, but to good. It is your soul that I am buying for you. I withdraw it from dark thoughts and from the spirit of perdition, and I give it to God." Jean Valjean departs from the bishop's home in a state of stupefaction. He is mystified. In the countryside, he meets a little gypsy boy, and inadvertently, he doesn't mean to, but he robs him of a coin. The boy is throwing a coin in the air, and as he drops it, Jean Valjean puts his foot on it. But he's so stupefied that he doesn't recognize what he's done, and even though the boy cries and asks for the coin back, Jean Valjean is not hearing him. And only later, when the boy runs away, does he realize that he has wronged this child. For the first time, he experiences remorse. He who had always had injustice played out on him now has committed an injustice. And he looks everywhere for the boy, from town to town, but he can't find him. Finally, he gives some money to another priest that he meets and asks him to give it to the poor. But he never ceases to look for this gypsy boy in every town he goes into on his way to his hometown. 8 years later, Jean Valjean is living a righteous life. He has moved to a town, which is an industrial town. He has taken an assumed name. He has broken parole to do so. He has invented a system of making jet glass beads, imitation jet. And these are very in demand as the fashion of the 1820s. He has become a factory owner, and eventually he's become the mayor of the town. But he still lives a very quiet life, and he's quite a mystery to the townspeople. The factory workers look at him as a father figure, and he's quite beloved by them, but he is, again, a mystery. At the beginning of the stage production, factory workers and the unemployed and the street people together sing a song about the state of affairs in France at that time, which is unrest, unease, economic injustice that has not improved since the revolution. So we'll start with that song at the end of the day. Thank you. factory as a young woman named Fantine. She spent some years in Paris, also working as a factory girl, and there she had a boyfriend, and she has a baby. She had to return to her hometown in disgrace, and because it was inconceivable that a single mother could work in the society, she has her child staying with an innkeeper at a town some miles away, pretty far actually, too far for her to visit. She has to send the money all the time, and they're really dishonest and incorrigible people. They keep continually sending her notes demanding more money, demanding that clothes be provided for her child, and then they don't actually use the money for that, or medicine. She has some jewelry that she sells. She lives very humbly on her wages from the factory, but still their demands continue to come and she can't meet them on her little salary. She has beautiful hair and she eventually sells her hair to try to also pay a medical bill. And she's a very sad character. Finally, she loses her job because some gossips at the factory have learned that she has a child. It's because she isn't able to write, and she has to write through a public letter writer. And so word gets around who's using a public letter writer. And her life is very disappointing to her, extremely disappointing. So she sings this song, "I Dreamed a Dream."
Together.
Fantine's situation gets worse. She receives a message from the innkeeper's family saying that her daughter Cosette is very sick and they need 500 francs, and they don't receive it. They're going to send her put her out into the street. She doesn't have enough money to go and get her. That's not an option either. So as she walks along the street, she sees a man who is both a juggler and a dentist. and he sees her in the crowd as he's selling patent medicines and talking about dentistry, and he offers her money for her 2 front teeth. She has very beautiful teeth, and that was part of her beauty. And so she's horrified and runs away, but he calls after her, "Meet me at this inn. If you change your mind, I'll give you a significant sum of money." So in the end, she, weighing it against her daughter's situation, she goes to the inn and has her 2 incisors removed. But that isn't enough. It's only enough for part of the money. So in the end, she becomes a prostitute and joins the other women on the street. It's a harbor town, and there are a lot of prostitutes around the harbor. There's an inspector of police in the town. His name is Inspector Javert. He's familiar with Jean Valjean from the galley days, and he believes in law and order. One night, Fantine is outside the music house, walking back and forth, looking for customers. And some of the young men of the town think it would be funny to throw snow down the back of her evening gown that she's wearing, kind of a bedraggled evening gown. And she's so infuriated and enraged by their abuse that she attacks them and starts fighting with them. And so naturally, citizens versus prostitute, she's the one who's arrested and taken to the police station. And there she's about to be sentenced, but the mayor, Jean Valjean, intervenes. He has seen what's happened on the street, and he intervenes on Fantine's behalf. She faints dead away, and he has her taken to the infirmary adjacent to his factory to be nursed back to health by the sisters there. This is a way that kind of sets up the difference between the characters of Jean Valjean and Inspector Javert. Javert, they both think they're right. Javert believes in order above all. Order over chaos, that's what's most important to him. He was born in the chaos of the revolution, he was born in jail, and he sees the law and respect for authority as the only way to survive in society. Whereas Jean Valjean represents a kind of grace or mercy. As they talk about it together at the police station later, Javert comments to Jean Valjean that he would never show the same kind of kindness that Valjean showed, because kindness disorganizes society. Meanwhile, Javert thinks he has found Jean Valjean, who is going by the name Monsieur Madeleine in this town. And he informs the mayor that he's found this ex-convict who he's been looking for a long time. And his name is Jean Valjean. He knows him. And Jean Valjean is put in a terrible position, because if he lets Javert take this innocent man to prison, then he is responsible for that person's life. It will be life imprisonment for breaking parole. On the other hand, if he steps forward and says, "No, I'm really Jean Valjean," then he'll go back to prison. And his whole system that he's created with his factory and his infirmary and so forth will collapse. So he sings a beautiful song where he tries to decide who he really is. Finally, he tells Javert who he is and his number, 24601. And so Valjean says, of course, that he's going to take him right there and then and there. But Jean Valjean needs to take care of Fantine. He's made a promise to her. So he escapes from Inspector Javert and goes to Fantine in the infirmary as she is dying. He promises her that he will take care of her child. He's now learned her situation. He knows that his factory and the way it was run was the reason that Fantine lost her job and was in the situation she was in. So he goes to the inn, Fantine dies. But she dies with this promise that Cosette will be taken care of. He goes to the inn and buys her from the innkeeper there, gives them a great deal of money, and takes her to Paris, where they live in seclusion for 9 years in a convent. Now, 9 years later, the Paris in which Jean Valjean and Cosette reside is very unrest. There's a great deal of unrest. There's uneasiness throughout the society. It's 17 years since the Battle of Waterloo, but the emperor and the empire and the valor of the Battle of Waterloo are still remembered with great veneration, and yet there's great dissatisfaction in the new order, the second emperor that they call the person who's occupying the throne. Little change has been effected even since the first French Revolution, despite it's always touted as, well, the revolution, but really little has changed. There are still poor everywhere. There are many homeless people. There's great inequity economically. And all the revolts that have followed have not succeeded. So there's great despair and discouragement. The poor inhabit every quarter of the city, and the homeless include many children who are quite streetwise. Most of them with street smarts enough to survive, can survive on the street. A few of them hang around the university and are kind of mascots to some of the intellectuals there who are talking about revolution. It begins to infiltrate their own thinking. And so the children sing a song about what little people can accomplish. And it's called Little People, and Julia and her friends will sing it.
Because it's just a hope. You better look for cover when the hope grows.
song has such cute lyrics, but I have to add that, every time I hear it, I think of the children in places where fighting is a way of life, and how, even in my travels, especially in the Middle East, I've seen that look in the eyes, even of young children, of just wait for me to grow up. I too can fight. I feel like I've seen it in the eyes of Palestinian children and of Israeli children, and it has a sadness about it, I think, too. Well, the university students' passion is very genuine. They are, they want freedom. They don't want the old regime. They don't want society to go on the way it has. And they have ultimate faith in the people of the city, that if their revolt begins, the people will rise up and join them. This is almost a treasured kind of symbol or identity of Parisians, that they'll get up and fight if they are called to by revolutionaries. So when finally the straw breaks the camel's back, it is when a legislator in the assembly dies, General Lamarck, who is the last kind of liberal that anyone would have any hope for. He's described as being between left and radically left. And he was sort of, while he was alive, there was still always some hope for change, but with his death, all hope kind of falls apart for institutional change. And so the students use this as a rallying cry and a point at which to stand up and leave the cafes into the streets to call the people to revolution. And we'll sing their call to arms. It's called Do You Hear the People Sing?
Beating of your heart.
at the same time all this revolution is going on, there's a lot of romance and love in the streets of Paris. Cosette, who has now grown and in a very sheltered way in her the home of the man she thinks is her father, is a young woman, and on their walks in the park she has seen a young student named Marius. Marius has a whole involved story that's told in the novel Les Misérables, but it's a little bit too involved to tell right now. He is basically a poverty-stricken son of an army officer who is trying to be both a student and an idealist at the same time, until he becomes smitten with Cosette, and the revolution begins to get a little fuzzy for him. Still, he's committed to it, but he's infatuated with Cosette, and he wants to meet her. They don't know who each other are. They only see each other. And finally, when they are able to meet, it's because a third person, a street girl, the older sister of one of the children, agrees to take Marius to Jean Valjean's house so that he can meet Cosette. This girl's name is Eponine. Marius and Cosette have a thwarted romance because the revolution is coming and Marius is committed to fight. And Jean Valjean is preparing to take Cosette away to England because the unrest in the city is making it more difficult for him to keep his identity a secret and keep undercover. But when they meet, they sing this beautiful love song that Amy and Eric will sing.
Heart full. Thank you. decade, early fighting begins between the students and the National Guard. Hipponin cautions Marius, who stands unprotected as shots begin to be fired. He doesn't notice that Hipponin is hit by a bullet intended for him. As rain slows the fighting, Marius finds the dying girl in a side street.
That's known as the Battle of the Barricades, goes into its second day. Jean Valjean, living in the suburbs, decides to go to the barricades seeking Marius. He's discovered the love that exists between Cosette and Marius, and he realizes that it's not something that he can control. He's been controlling Cosette's life since he rescued her when she was 7, but now he needs to make his peace with Marius, who he once viewed as an intruder and a threat, and assure himself in his aging that Marius will be around to take care of Cosette when he's gone. So he goes to the barricade looking for Marius, and he wears a uniform or some garb that makes him he makes it clear to the students that he's not a member of the National Guard or a spy. When he gets there, he finds that Inspector Javert has been captured by the students, and he's been a spy, and as the battle winds to the point where it's just a matter of hours before it will be a total disaster, they offer Inspector Javert to Jean Valjean for execution. And he has performed some heroism that they want to reward him with. So they give him this offer to execute Inspector Javert. This would solve all of Jean Valjean's problems, of course. Javert has been on his tail all these years and has never given up seeking him, and has even recognized him already in the streets of Paris. Despite this, Jean Valjean takes Javert down a side street where he can escape through the barricade, fires a shot in the air, and lets Javert go free. The Battle of the Barricades is clearly going to be lost. The people of Paris have not risen up to join. It's really just a few students and working people. They have no hope of establishing any change. They're going to die there, and they begin to realize it. So they send those with families or children, married people, away to their homes to try to avoid prosecution later. And only the young students remain to die in martyrdom. Marius is badly injured, and in the heat of the battle, Jean Valjean slings Marius over his shoulder and escapes with him into the vast network of sewers beneath the streets of Paris. There he wanders through this labyrinth looking for a way out. He knows that if he can find his directions toward the river, there will surely be an exit there. But it's a long and terrifying process, and all the time he's afraid that Marius will die before he can get him to safety or to a doctor, or whether they'll ever escape from the miserable sewers. And at one point he lays Marius down and prays over him this song, "Bring Him Home."
Joy, he is young.
Well, they make their way to the river, and of course, waiting at the mouth of the river, actually pursuing someone else, but happy to find them, is Inspector Javert. And he is faced with a dilemma that he has not had to face before. And in a weak moment, an extremely weak moment, he instructs Jean Valjean to lug Marius over to his hired carriage and tells the driver to take them wherever they want to go. This is so contrary to his way of thinking about order and right, and his concept of righteousness, his own betrayal of what he views as authority, that he can't live with himself, and goes to the river bridge and throws himself into the Seine and kills himself. Marius, however, survives this ordeal and convalesces in the home of Jean Valjean, where he and Cosette begin to make a life for themselves and put the revolution behind them. He does not know that it was Jean Valjean who rescued him. He thinks that it was just somehow random that he was saved and all his friends have died. They're planning to be married. He's quickly moving into the realm of the middle class. Cosette has some money, but he's haunted by the memory of his friends and their ideals. So he returns to the university cafes where he sat with his friends and sings the song, Empty Chairs at Empty Tables.
Spoken. There's a pain goes on and on. Empty chairs at empty tables. Now my friends are dead and gone. Here they talked of revolution. Here it was they lit the flame. Here they sang about tomorrow. But tomorrow never came. In the table, in the corner, they could see a world reborn. And they rose with voices ringing. I can hear them now, the very words that they had sung. Became their last communion on that lonely barricade at dawn. Oh, my friends, forgive me that I live and you are gone. There's a grief that can't be spoken. There's a pain goes on and on. Phantom faces at the window. Phantom faces on the floor. Empty chairs at empty tables. Where my friends will meet no more. Oh, my friends, forgive me. Don't ask what your sacrifice was for. Empty chairs at empty tables, where my friends will sing no more.